From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the fourth day of January 2024. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net. We'll hear a couple of stories from Washington, D.C., related news items, and the RFS, ethanol, and biofuels. And then as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast, too. Today, we'll be joined by Mike Tenura at T-Storm Weather at T-Storm.com. .net online.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
And March corn for the day settled at $4.66.5. It was up a penny and a quarter. The May at $4.79, a penny higher. In December futures, new crop, a quarter higher at $4.98.75. March beans at $12.67.5, down 9.5 cents. May $12.76.5, down 8.5 cents. November futures at $12.20.75, down 4.5 cents. The bean meal futures down $4.20. The bean oil 44 cents lower. Wheat futures were up 13 and a quarter, settled the soft red at $6.13.5. The hard red at $6.25.75. Both of these, the March contracts, up 4.25 cents. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the lead option at 171.12.5. Down 72.5 cents, and lean hogs for the day at $69 and a nickel finished $3.75 higher. Matt Bennett now joins us from AgMarket.net to discuss the trade for the day. Hi, Matt. Thank you for being with us. It's been a rough week. Was today any better?
Oh, today was okay. I mean, for the most part, corn was up a little bit, but beans just can't really catch a break right now. Too much rain going on in South America to really get anything good going. So, overall, I guess it's pretty tough to get too excited about the kind of market action we're seeing. The only thing that really had a great day, I guess, was wheat, which had a pretty nice little day trading some double digits on some of their contracts.
Why was that the case, do you suppose?
You know, I didn't really see a lot of great news. I mean, their wheat market's been real finicky, as it usually is. I didn't see any major news like bombings or anything like that that you usually see when it comes to the wheat market. But, you know, for the most part, it's just, I think the wheat market's been beat up, you know, at times over the last few weeks, enough, you know, that people come in and seem to buy whenever you get to some of your support levels. So you basically, you got several levels converging here, you know, and then, oh, I don't know, the 50-day, as I look at the chart, you know, you kind of dip down below it, saw some buying come back in, and then actually towards the close of the day, you know, you're bumping up on the 10 and 20 day. So, I actually closed above the 100. And so, I don't know, as far as the wheat market's concerned, I mean, you know, maybe a little bit of buying comes into this thing after the way that it's kind of just floundered around over the last few weeks.
Do you suppose corn might be able to follow wheat up, given that it has been technically so weak, making contract lows in the beginning of this year, just earlier in the week, and down 30% in price from last year?
Yeah, I mean, the problem with the corn deal, you know, of course, is that, basically you're going to hit a wall of supply. So any sort of rally effort that you get, you're likely to see basis widen and a lot of grain hit the market. So, I hate to be down in the dumps. I think that you'll get a rally. As far as the futures are concerned, I think they're oversold, and it's been such a crummy market that I think you'll finally get some buying that'll come in here. Maybe it's around the January report. Maybe it's as you work your way into February. I do know there's a lot of concern with the planning timing of that safrinha crop, first of all. And second of all, you know, you're going to go in, unless you just continue to get a deluge of rain, you're going to go in fairly dry this year. So, yeah, I think there could be some possibilities of some buying in there. But, I mean, long-term, I'm probably a little more bearish than what people like to hear. It's just short-term. Short-term, I think we can get a little bit of a bounce.
I would like to bring up something you already talked about just a little bit. If we get a rally in the market, your concern, and we've talked about this on the air before, is that the futures, or that the basis, the cash market, will widen out simply because there's so much supply that needs to go down restricted waterways and other places.
Yeah, I mean, essentially what you've got is the farmer hasn't sold enough. And so, you know, it's a fairly poorly kept kept secret that the producer didn't get enough corn sold on this 23 crop. A lot of corn's on storage, a lot of corn's on in the bin at home. And so 15.2 billion bushels, according to the USDA, would be the biggest crop ever. If that's the case, then any sort of rally that you get, basis is very likely to widen, at least in the short run. Now, if someone's patient and they sell the carry in the market, out to the July, maybe, I think sometime between now and July, they're probably going to have a better basis than today. But I think the next 6-8 weeks could be pretty tough as far as basis is concerned, especially if you get any rally. I'd fully expect that you'd give up most of that, if not all of it, in basis.
Much of that time period will depend on what shows up in the USDA reports. The crop production report and yields from the United States, those will be pulled from what farmers say they brought out of the field. Some 70,000 of them are contacted during the month of December to find out what that is. Will yields change for corn and or soybeans? And then, of course, the WASDE, which will adjust maybe or maybe not what's coming from South America, particularly Brazil and Argentina, I think, is going to play a much bigger role this year. What's your concerns for next year?
Yeah, I think the tough call, I guess, in January report is, what yields are going to look like. I think the latest harvested stuff was in the Eastern Corn Belt, which was better than expected in a lot of areas. And so, I wouldn't be surprised to see a little bit of an uptick in yields. I don't think it'll be a lot. It's going to be very interesting, though. I think even more interesting for me to see what USDA does in South America. We know that the bean crop was hurt. How much has been a big topic of discussion on our ag market fundamental webinar this week. We had Eric Snodgrass in, and he kind of dissected how he was looking at it. And I'm super interested just to see that several of these areas in Brazil actually are the driest they've been since 1979. So, that yield's been hurt, but how's the USDA going to do it? Typically, they stair step into it. I don't think they take a huge chunk out of production, but I could see corn, maybe coming down a million or two, but beans, maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 million metric tons. But, is that going to be all we're going to see? I think later on you might see a little bit more.
Anything in the way of adjustments for Argentina?
No, Argentina, I think, is in good shape. If there was an adjustment, maybe even uptick just a little bit. I think it's totally different than what it was a year ago. First of all, second of all, completely opposite of what Brazil's weather's been in totality. Southern Brazil's actually gotten along fairly good, probably too much rain at times. Whereas Northern Brazil has just been a train wreck in some areas. And so Argentina, actually, overall, most of the country's in awfully good shape, and it looks like production could be pretty robust.
Thanks much. We'll talk with you again next week.
Absolutely. Thanks.
That's Matt Bennett. He is with AgMarket.net. There are two news items for the day, both from Washington, D.C. We'll start with liquid fuel sales, including ethanol blended gas, which will continue for the foreseeable future. That, according to most experts, despite the politics of climate change. U.S. electric vehicle sales were up more than half last year over 2022, but automakers say growth slowed as consumers had second thoughts over prices, battery range, and a lack of charging stations. Still, it has raised concerns in the ethanol industry.
Demand for liquid fuels in light-duty transportation, we do expect to be flat or declining over the long term.
That's Jeff Cooper. He's with the Renewable Fuels Association.
We don't expect to see significant demand loss in the short term, really even in the 5 to 10 year window. We think the demand destruction that would be attributable to EVs is probably not really going to be terribly acute until in that 10 to 15 to 20 year time horizon.
And RFA's Cooper says if last year is any clue,
we saw stronger overall gasoline consumption and stronger levels of ethanol blending and continued advancement in higher blends like E15 and E85,
including RFA road testing E85 in a hybrid electric vehicle. But there is a bottom line, as USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack sees it.
We're going to have cars that use ethanol for a long time.
Meanwhile, U.S. oil production has hit a record pace. Now, a bill in Congress aims to increase financing and cut red tape for the biorefinery industry. This is the related topic. Its backers say it could help the U.S. develop viable alternatives to many petroleum-based products. Illinois Public Media's Jim Meadows reports.
The Ag Bio Act was introduced in both the U.S. House and Senate this fall with bipartisan backing. Lloyd Ritter is with the Agriculture Energy Coalition. He says if the bill passes, the U.S. could produce more biofuels and other crop-based alternatives to products, from plastics to detergents, now made from petroleum.
Anything that we produce or have produced from traditional refineries for the last 100 years or so can be made by our farmers and our clean technology and biotechnology companies.
The Ag Bio Act would create a new grant for building and expanding biorefineries. Backers hope to get the legislation attached to the new farm bill. I'm Jim Meadows, IPM News.
The Ag Bio Act is sponsored in the House by Iowa Republican Zach Nunn. Illinois Democrat Nikki Budzinski is the lead co-sponsor. The Senate version of the bill is sponsored by Minnesota Democrat Amy Klobuchar and co-sponsored by Kansas Republican Jerry Moran. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You know, next week I'll be on the road with the Farm Doc team for the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. We'll be in Mount Vernon, East Peoria, and DeKalb. You can see all the details at willag.org. Registration is still open there. It may very well close pretty soon. We'll take a few walk-ins at each of those places. So if you'd like to come, you can still find all the details on what time and where at willag.org. Traveling with us next week will be agricultural economist Joe Jansen. He has written a series of articles, and one will be released again tomorrow, about post-harvest marketing. This is a pretty simple term for those who are in agriculture. It's, I harvested my crop, it's stored someplace, and I need to market it. Why did you put this series together?
Well, the simple fact is that farms in Illinois have a lot of grain to market after harvest. While farmers can forward sell and deliver a lot of grain at harvest time, we know that they don't, that inventories on Illinois grain farms tend to be really high. And there's a group of farms that we've shown using data from Illinois Farm Business Farm Management, or FBFM, that hold pretty much everything that they've produced in inventory as of December 31st. And the question is, like, what's the plan to market that grain?
What did you write about in the first two of this series?
So the first two, we just look at the inventory levels held by Illinois farms and sort of when are farmers marketing. We show that a significant portion of the marketing activity for Illinois grain farms happens after January 1st. So this post-harvest marketing problem is a big one for Illinois farms. And in particular, it varies a lot across farms. So there are some farms that are pretty active marketers, that market, you know, throughout the year and even before harvest. They have a significant pre-harvest marketing program. But there's another group that really waits until now to really address this problem, tackle the post-harvest marketing challenge.
Are there extra challenges this year? Because it seems, and you may have a better idea about this, that there is more crop to market this year than there has been in the past.
Well, we've been in a period of declining prices, and that is one where it gets harder to pull that trigger when you're in, when you've sort of seen higher prices slip away, right? We've seen, corn prices fall from something in the sixes down to numbers in the fours. And a lot of farmers may have some regret about not marketing more sooner, and hoping that the market will kind of come back, and give them back some of those paper losses.
Historically, does that happen?
We never say never, but we're in a situation right now. We can see where, you know, corn inventories are very high. We have, you know, over 2 billion bushels of corn expected to be held at the end of this current marketing year. That's a pretty big number that tends to mean that prices stay lower and may stay lower for longer.
I can remember from Darrell Good talking about March, April, and May being not too bad in terms of time to market a crop, although I'm pretty certain that he was thinking about new crop and not old crop.
That's right. Well, we do know that, you know, prices tend to appreciate, that old crop price tends to appreciate. The problem is that farmers are also incurring costs to hold on to that crop. And so that price appreciation has to be really significant. We'll talk about that in future articles in this post-harvest grain marketing series up on FarmDoc Daily.
What advice do you have for producers for the crop that they have in storage at this point? And does that differ by commercial storage as opposed to home storage? And then we can talk about new crop as well.
So the advice that I have is have a plan. If you want to hold on to that crop into April, May, June, Be really clear about the conditions that it would take to get that crop out of storage and what price you think you can realize, what gain you can realize by holding on to that grain. The thing is that, yes, there are costs. There are costs even for holding grain in owned storage and on-farm storage. One is, you know, any sort of cost that you have of keeping that grain in condition, and, you know, the cost of, you know, the depreciation on those bins and things like that, those physical costs, but then also the interest costs, and those costs don't go away. Whether they're in, you know, those interest costs are pretty significant, holding onto grain and not getting the cash, for what that the value of that commodity.
Finally, how do you suppose marketing from the perspective of the United States producer, the farmer that lives here, has changed in the last two decades as there's been the rise of crops, a corn crop out of South America, a soybean crop out of South America that really is, particularly for corn, has changed global trade?
Yeah, I think the issue is that, you know, there can be pretty significant changes to the global supply and demand balance in sort of a period where we don't get a lot of production news or weather news here in the United States. And that's maybe changed, where the sort of the seasonal pattern is a little less stable. There is a seasonal pattern. I mean, the prices tend to be higher away from harvest, but we can get some pretty big shocks that mean that situation can change. And that's where having a plan, and knowing the conditions under which you will bring that grain out of storage and bring it to market is really important.
What you're saying is know your cost, know what price you want to market at, and do market at that price when it arrives.
Yeah, I think that's where something like target orders can be a really great great tool for producers to use, to have a commitment device to say, when the market's, you know, sees that price level, I will act. I am committed to act.
Thank you much.
Thank you.
And of course, it's Joe Jansen. He's an agricultural economist. We'll be on the road with us with the Farm Doc team at the Illinois Farm Economics Summits in Mount Vernon on Tuesday, Peoria on Wednesday, and DeKalb on Thursday of next week. You can join us at willag.org. There's a registration there. It will be shut down soon enough. So if you're going to register, make sure you get that done quickly. A walk-ins should be welcome on the day of. Time now to check on the growing regions across the planet and what the weather and impact has been or might be. We'll do that with Mike Tenera. He's at T-Storm Weather at tstorm.net online. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us again on this Thursday. I want to start here in the United States. A changing weather forecast coming into next week, at least from what we have had. Can you tell me about it, please?
Well, there's a big pattern change that is taking place across the Northern Hemisphere and even into the Southern Hemisphere for that matter. And this is essentially happening because the El Nino peaked about 4 to 5 weeks ago, and now we're moving away from that type of setup and into a new one. Historically, when we're in this setup in the United States, we end up having a pretty wet winter and a pretty wet spring. And that certainly is the case that's developing at the moment. We have a system that's out in the plains today, and that will produce some rain and snow for the hard red winter wheat crop over the next 24 hours. The bigger story, though, is what comes in from Sunday through Tuesday of next week. A major system is going to move across the central U.S., and the only question is, where is this thing going to go? There's going to be a lot of rain and a lot of snow with this system, and also a lot of wind. You might recall that last winter was fairly boring across most of the central U.S., with very little in the way of winter storms. So there's no question that this is the strongest storm system in more than a year to affect the central U.S. It's just a matter of how strong is it going to be. But at this point, it looks like we'll see quite a bit of rain and snow for most of the winter wheat crop, not only in the plains and in the Corn Belt, but even in the eastern U.S. from that event. So the winter wheat crop is going to be looking very moist a week from now. On top of that, Todd, this is the only the beginning phase of this change. Once we get beyond early next week, it will turn much colder across the U.S., and that's going to keep that main storm track lined up right through the middle of the country. And the way it looks now, there'll be another winter storm of some magnitude later next week, and especially next weekend, so around 10 days from now. That one would most likely affect the eastern Corn Belt, but especially the Northeast. And that's the area that we'll be watching for that next one.
Do you think, as I travel across the state with the FarmDoc team next week, starting in Mount Vernon on Tuesday, traveling in the afternoon to Peoria, and then on to DeKalb, coming back from there on Thursday, that we'll run into issues?
Well, Wednesday and Thursday, probably not. I mean, the storm should be over with by then, but the storm is still 5 days out, so a lot can change between now and then. Now, if the system stays on the current trajectory, there'll be travel problems across Illinois on Tuesday in particular. But if it goes a little bit further north or south, or if it speeds up or slows down and brings more rain than snow, I mean, all of these things are subject to debate. But at this point, the best thing to do is what you're doing right now, which is just keeping an eye on the weather for Tuesday. And once we get into Saturday, and especially Sunday, then you should have a pretty good idea so you can adjust your plans at that time.
In South America, what does the Brazilian crop look like?
Well, it's been real dry in the north and real wet in the south over most of the growing season. That has changed a bit over the last week, with those northern areas finally getting some decent rains while the southern areas are drying out a bit. That pattern is going to last for another 5 to 7 days, so it will keep getting wetter in northern areas of Brazil while the southern areas continue to dry out. And it might even get to the point where Paraná in particular would benefit from some rain, and that's around 15 to 20% of Brazil's soybean production. Once we get more than a week out, though, the pattern kind of reverses again, and that will bring decent rains into the southern areas while the northern areas start to dry out a little bit. So kind of an alternating mix of weather across Brazil for the next 2 weeks.
And in Argentina?
Well, Argentina's had a fantastic amount of rain over the last several weeks and even into November. As we move forward, that pattern is essentially going to continue. So we see numerous opportunities for more rain. And because of that, there's really nothing to be concerned about in Argentina. In fact, at some point, people will probably start need to thinking about whether this is going to start raising yields a lot.
And do you have any thoughts about what that particular crop might look like?
Well, we started our YieldCast forecast service for South America corn and soybean yields, and we've been giving that away free for the last month or so, but now it's going to turn into a subscription service. And in Argentina in particular, the one thing that really sticks out is that our models are indicating that this rain has been very beneficial to soybean potential across the country. Now, it's still early. They're still planting soybeans today. So, you know, there's a lot of time to go before we really know what the yield will be. But at this point in time, things are looking pretty ideal for that crop. And as long as we get okay rains going forward, then we would expect a fairly large soybean crop. But again, Todd, there's still months to go on that one.
Hey, thank you much, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Todd.
Just a quick note about Mike Tenora and TStorm.net's YieldCast forecast, that subscription service he mentioned. Mike is a graduate both in meteorology and agricultural economics from here on the Urbana-Champaign campus at the University of Illinois, and he studied ag econ with both Daryl Good and Scott Irwin, and I know for a fact that those numbers originally came out of some of the graduate work that he did here. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org. There you'll find our daily agricultural programming to listen to on demand anytime you'd like. Just click and play from the website, or you can hit the podcast link there and subscribe to the Closing Market Report, Commodity Week, and even the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Podcast, all at willag.org. The theme music for our program is written, produced, and performed by Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.